Hey, Keystoners. Welcome back to Keystone State of Mind. It's me, Steph, your tour guide to the dark side of Pennsylvania. You guys, KSOM has gained so many new listeners over the last week. So I want to say hey to all the new Keystoners out there. And of course, much love to my loyal listeners who have been with me since day one. And my begging for ratings and reviews worked because I got 3 new reviews this week. Big thank you to 88 Lizards, Buchan RM, and Oda 88881997 for your awesome reviews. Thank you guys so much. The private Facebook group KSOM Keystoners is growing as well. So if you haven't already, go join. And that's just a space where we can share anything and everything Keystone, whether it be Keystone State or Keystone Light or whatever you want to share, really. Anything funny, cool, interesting. That's also where you can interact with me if you feel so inclined. Also, you can email me at keystonestateofmindthepod@gmail.com. I am still working on the website. It is going to be the death of me, I swear. But once it's done, that will be a place where we can interact as well, hopefully. And I do have some cool merch that I'm going to put up as soon as the website's ready. I have to put out a content warning for today's episode. We will be discussing the topic of suicide a little bit. Nothing too graphic, nothing like the Bud Dwyer episode, but it does come up a couple of times. So if that is a sensitive topic for you or a trigger, you may want to skip this episode or at least the parts where we're going to talk about that. And also, I just want to share the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number. That is 1-800-273-8255. If you or anyone you know is struggling with suicidal thoughts, that's the place where you can get some anonymous help. I will also put that number in the show notes for today. Today's case also has some parallels to the Jonathan Luna case that we discussed back in episode 6, maybe, or 7. I can't even remember. So if you liked that episode, you're going to like this one. But if you hated the fact that there was no answer, you might be annoyed at this one. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into it. But first, let's get into a Keystone State of Mind. As always, I'll be enjoying an ice-cold can of Keystone Light, even though it is a little early on this Saturday morning. On Friday, April 15th, 2005, Ray Grecar, the district attorney for Centre County, Pennsylvania, decided to take the day off work. He went on a little solo road trip in his red Mini Cooper. After taking a drive on the country roads to a nearby town to visit an antique store, Ray Grecar was never seen again. In 2005, Ray Grecar was 59 years old. He had been a district attorney for over 30 years and spent 20 of those years in Centre County. He lived in a little town called Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, with his longtime girlfriend, Patty Fornicola. You guys know how I am with names, and this name instantly just makes me think of that Red Hot Chili Peppers song, Californication. But to me, it's Dream of Patty Fornicola. I'm a dork, but you guys know that already. Ray had been married and divorced twice before, and he had an adult daughter named Lara, who lived in Washington State. Patty had also been divorced, so neither were in a real big hurry to get married again. They were content living together just the way things were, and by all accounts, they had a really great relationship. Patty described it as they had both finally found their soulmate in one another. Ray was described as being driven and very independent, also charming and intelligent, but he was a very serious man. He wasn't known to be terribly sociable at work in his office, except, of course, with Patty, because that's where he met her. She also worked in the district attorney's office. Ray was a big sports fan. And he grew up in Ohio, so he followed the Cleveland Indians baseball team and the Cleveland Browns football team. Ray was known to really enjoy long drives in his Mini Cooper. He would drive the country roads of Pennsylvania by himself to just relax and reflect. And that was something that he did often and really enjoyed. Shortly before his disappearance, Ray announced that he would not seek re-election for another term as Centre County District Attorney. And it's quite common for people leaving the DA's office to go into private practice, maybe to continue working. But Ray said he was not going to do that. He was going to retire as of January 1st, 2006, he and Patty had plans to travel and just enjoy their lives together without the stress of Ray being the DA. There isn't much known about Ray's early life or his family, but Ray did have at least one brother named Roy. Yeah, Ray. And Roy. By the way, Ray is not short for Raymond or anything. That's his name, Ray Frank Grecar. And his brother Roy, I don't know his middle name, but Roy wasn't short for anything either. I don't know that Roy could be short for anything, but whatever. In May of 1996, so like 9 years before Ray went missing, Roy also went missing. He left his home in Dayton, Ohio, told his wife that he was going to buy mulch, and he never came home. Police eventually found his truck about 40 miles from his home near a bridge over the Great Miami River. And a few days later, they found Roy's body. It had washed up downstream in the river. Roy's manner of death was determined to be suicide by drowning. Even though Roy had a lifetime battle with depression, Ray had a hard time believing that he would take his own life. Roy had two sons, and Ray just did not believe that he would abandon them like that. However, at the end of the investigation, it was concluded that Roy did take his own life, and Ray eventually came to terms with that. Ray had always been close to his two nephews, but after his brother's death, that relationship grew much stronger. So now we're up to April 15th, 2005. That Friday morning, Patty woke up and woke Ray up for work. And Ray told her that he was going to play hooky that day. He was going to give himself a 3-day weekend. Patty said, good, you need a break. Ray worked very hard and he deserved it. For a couple weeks leading up to that day, Ray had been quite tired and he was napping a lot. And Patty was getting a little concerned and had spoken to him about going to the doctor. So when Ray said he was going to take the day off, Patty was glad that he was going to get some much needed rest. So Patty went on to work and Ray stayed in bed. A little later that day, around like 11:30 in the morning, Ray called Patty at work to let her know that he was going to take a little drive. He wouldn't be home to take the dog out, so Patty would need to come home on her lunch break and take care of their dog. Patty didn't hear from Ray anymore that day, and that wasn't unusual. He was out doing his own thing. When Patty got home from work, like after 5, Ray still wasn't home, so Patty decided to go to the gym. When she got home from the gym at like 8 o'clock and Ray still wasn't home, she was really starting to get concerned. She was calling his cell phone like every 15 minutes and it was just going straight to voicemail. By 11 p.m., she was frantic and called the police. Ray, being part of the law enforcement community, being the district attorney, the police knew that this wasn't just some guy that took off, and they jumped into action really quickly. By the next morning, Saturday, April 16th, the search for Ray was in full swing. The police had gotten a hold of his coworkers, his friends. No one had seen him or heard from him, and he still had not returned any calls home. Years before, when Ray was married to his second wife, Emma, they had had an argument, and Ray kind of just took off for the day, and he went to a Cleveland Indians baseball game. So police wondered if maybe he'd done something like that this time. Although, according to Patty, they hadn't had any kind of an argument. There was no turmoil at all at home. But police still wanted to check that out because that day, April 16th, 2005, that Saturday, was opening day for the Cleveland Indians. So they thought maybe he just took off and went to the game. Maybe his phone's dead or broken, you know? So the Bellefonte police actually got a hold of security at the Cleveland Indians baseball field and had them check the parking lot for Ray's car and to check the stands to see if he was there. I believe they even paged him over the loudspeaker, but of course he was not at that game. The Bellefonte police and the Pennsylvania state troopers put out a BOLO, a be on the lookout order for Ray's red Mini Cooper to neighboring police departments. At around 5:30 on Saturday, police also held a press conference to get the word out about Ray's disappearance and also to reach out to him if he was just out somewhere doing his own thing. Patty spoke at the press conference, and so did Ray's daughter, Lara. Patty had gotten a hold of her throughout the night, and Lara got an emergency flight to Pennsylvania. Within 90 minutes of the press conference, police got their first lead. A state trooper in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, about 45 minutes away, spotted Ray's car at the Street of Shops, this little antiques mall in Lewisburg. Upon the discovery of Ray's car, Bellefonte police, Lewisburg police, and the Pennsylvania state troopers went to go check out the scene. What they found in the car was kind of disturbing. The car was locked. The keys were not with the car. Ray's cell phone was inside and it was shut off. It wasn't broken or dead. It was in perfectly good working order. It was just shut off purposely. They also found cigarette ashes on the floor of the passenger side. The car had a very noticeable smell of cigarette smoke. Ray was well known to not be a smoker and to abhor the smell of cigarettes. So it's very unlikely that he allowed someone to smoke inside his vehicle. Police also found quite a few cigarette butts outside the passenger door on the ground. Now, these cigarette butts may have been there for any amount of time, who knows, but they did collect the cigarette butts for DNA testing. Investigators interviewed people in the antique shops, people that worked there and had been there the day before, and many of them did remember seeing Ray. He seemed to be in a normal state of mind. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. He was just a guy browsing at these antique shops. One thing they did ascertain was that Ray was in the company of a woman. Witnesses said they didn't seem to be romantically together. They weren't holding hands or showing any kind of physical affection like that. But Ray and this woman really did seem to be there together because they would go into shops together. They would also go into shops separately and meet back up outside and continue walking with one another. Police knew this from day one, but they didn't release that information to the public for like 18 months after. That was one piece of information that they held back for a while. They eventually did release the information just to try to see if that woman would come forward, but she never did. Investigators also searched Ray's office at work, and they pored over his desktop computer in his office. One thing they found that seemed a little strange was his search history on his computer at work showed where he was searching how to erase a hard drive from a computer. That was strange and concerning at first to investigators until they spoke with some of Ray's colleagues. And his colleagues said, yeah, he was asking how to do that, but he was getting ready to leave office after 20 years. He didn't want to leave any of his personal information on his work desktop or his work laptop. So he had a legitimate reason to try to wipe the hard drive just to get all his information off these computers so the next person who came along didn't have access to them. And that makes perfect sense. That also made perfect sense to the investigators at the time. So they're like, okay, yeah, I totally get that. Whatever. But police also found something else on Ray's work computer that was really weird. Ray had recently done a MapQuest search for directions from Bellefonte to Lewisburg, to the street of shops. And this was really strange because Ray already knew how to get there. He'd been there many times. He enjoyed that drive to Lewisburg, and he enjoyed frequenting the street of shops, the antique mall. So there was no reason why he would be in need of directions to get there. And if you're a youngster and don't remember MapQuest, that's back in the day when we didn't have GPS on our phones, and we actually had to go to MapQuest, put in our destination and where we were coming from, get the directions, print them out, and take them with us in the car. So, yeah, that's the old school way of doing shit, I guess. And that's what Ray was doing in 2005. Did he have GPS on his phone at that time? I'm not sure. Probably not. But he knew how to get there. He had been there many times, so it was totally strange that he would have to print directions to go there. Police also searched Ray and Patty's home. They found nothing amiss. Ray had taken the clothes that he was wearing that day, his wallet, keys, cell phone. But when police asked Patty to show them Ray's work laptop that he kept at the house, she brought out the laptop bag, only to find that the laptop was not in it. And there was another thing missing. Ray had purchased software to wipe the hard drive on the laptop. He kept that software the disc in the laptop bag, and that was also gone. Now, where Ray's car was found was eerily similar to the scene where his brother Roy's truck had been found 9 years earlier. Ray's Mini Cooper was also parked near a bridge over a large river, in this case, the Susquehanna. Based on Ray's brother's alleged suicide, police did entertain the notion that Ray may have taken his own life in the same way. So a large-scale search was soon underway of the Susquehanna River. But it was April. There had been a lot of rain and, of course, snow melt. We still get snow here in Pennsylvania in April. So there had been a buildup of snow. It melted, and in conjunction with the rain, the Susquehanna River was really high and flowing very fast. Those of us who live around here know that the Susquehanna is fucking filthy. Like, it's a gross ass river. I will occasionally float in it, but then I need to take a 2-hour-long shower when I get home because it's fucking gross. So they also had that to contend with. And this days-long search of the Susquehanna produced nothing. They didn't find any sign of Ray, any clothing, any shoes, his laptop, nothing. That wasn't a surprise, really, though, because of the state of the Susquehanna at that time. Ray's family, his daughter Laura, his nephews, his girlfriend Patty, his friends and coworkers, none of them could believe this was a suicide. Ray's life was good. He was getting ready to retire. He was finally in a happy, loving relationship. They had a beautiful home and a very nice life. Ray's nephews, who had lost their father to an apparent suicide, did not believe that Ray would take his own life. He had seen the chaos and the hurt that his family went through after Roy's death, and his nephews did not believe that he would ever put them through that again. The family was able to accept that Roy's death was a suicide because he had struggled with depression for so long. But Ray never did. Ray had never been treated for depression and never really showed any signs of it. Now, like I said earlier, for the couple of weeks leading up to Ray's disappearance, he was tired more and sleeping a lot. His coworkers did say that he was kind of aloof and acting withdrawn at work. But his closer friend said he was kind of always like that with his coworkers. He wasn't there to be buddies. He was there to do his job. He was very serious about his job. And he didn't really talk to these people in general. So it wasn't strange that he wasn't being friendly with them. Police also looked into the theory that maybe Ray was romantically involved with that woman that he had been seen with. Maybe he just took off and went to start a new life with this other woman. This idea really just hurt Patty so much. And in the media at the time, they were kind of painting Ray as some womanizer, which he really wasn't, according to everyone that knew him well. He was not like that. And Patty actually said, if Ray didn't want to be in this relationship with me, he would tell me. They weren't married. They didn't have common property, really. When Ray moved in with Patty, he paid off her mortgage, but it was still Patty's house. It's not like they had some giant debt that he could be running from. There wasn't going to be any kind of messy divorce. If he wanted to get out, he could have gotten out just by leaving. It was that simple. So nobody really believed that Ray would have left Patty and taken off with another woman. But that is something that police looked into. They did not leave any stone unturned. They looked into every aspect of Ray's life and really tried to figure out what could have happened. There was very little physical evidence that investigators could look at. There was those cigarette butts that were tested. DNA was retrieved. Now, as far as I can tell, no more information has been released than that. They did retrieve DNA. It didn't match anyone in the national database. One thing I wondered was the DNA from a woman. I couldn't find that information. Out of all the cigarette butts they tested, were they all the same DNA? Police haven't released that. I have no idea. My biggest question on this is, was the DNA on those cigarette butts from a woman? Fingerprints were lifted from Ray's car. The only clear fingerprints that analysts were able to identify did belong to Ray. There were some smudged prints that were not able to be analyzed or identified. So, evidence-wise, the only prints in the car were Ray's. They also picked through Ray's finances. He earned about $129,000 a year. He had a savings account of about $100,000. Like I said earlier, he had paid off Patty's mortgage and he bought his Mini Cooper in cash. There wasn't anything that jumped out to investigators, but they did kind of wonder, where did a lot of his money go? You know, he had $100,000 in his savings account. I didn't find any information about like what he had in maybe his checking or his retirement fund or anything like that. But they did seem to think that Ray should have had more money than he did have, but there were no suspect transactions that police were able to find. Investigators also had to look at Ray's professional life. He was a prosecutor. He sent a lot of people to prison. He investigated a lot of high-profile cases, and police needed to look into that too. There were two main cases that police found that they needed to look at closer. The first one was a very recent case of a large drug bust in Center County. A drug trafficker was living right in Bellefonte and moving heroin and cocaine from the coast, from New York, New Jersey, up north and out west. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. The second case is going to ring a bell to most of you. Jerry Sandusky, assistant coach of the Penn State football team. Most of us know that in 2011, Jerry Sandusky was brought down on hundreds of cases of sexual abuse over decades. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this because this is definitely on my list of cases I'm going to cover on KSOM. So we'll just do a quick overview. In 1977, Jerry Sandusky was the assistant coach for Penn State, and he founded an organization called the Second Mile. And this was to help at-risk and underprivileged youth from the cities of Pennsylvania to find an outlet, give them a chance to learn how to play football, and bring them into a positive environment. In 2011, we all found out that Jerry Sandusky was really using this organization as a way to victimize young boys. But what many people might not know is 2011 wasn't the first time Jerry Sandusky was investigated for these crimes. In 1998, Ray Grecar, the district attorney of Center County, was overseeing an investigation into Jerry Sandusky's abuse of children. Ray knew this was going to be a high-profile case, and he treaded lightly on all aspects. He wasn't going to just dismiss these charges, but he wanted to be sure that he was going to be able to obtain a conviction. What Ray decided to do was somewhat of a sting operation. He set up a meeting between one of the victim's moms and Jerry Sandusky himself. He wanted this victim's mother to accuse Sandusky and see what this fucking scumbag had to say. He put a police officer in the vicinity, and I think the conversation was recorded, but I can't say for sure. But there was a police officer on site. Jerry Sandusky did admit to maybe wrongful behavior. He did apologize to the victim's mother, but he never came out and said the word molestation. He didn't say enough during this interview or this interaction that gave Ray enough to prosecute him. So in the end, Ray Grecar opted not to prosecute, and Jerry Sandusky got off scot-free then in 1998. Thankfully, scumbag Sandusky did go down in 2011, but police looked into anyone that may have either one been trying to silence Ray Grecar on what he knew about the Penn State sex abuse scandal, or two, anybody that may have been victimized after Ray had opted not to prosecute Sandusky in 98. Police were really not able to find any connection to that case whatsoever. So now we know what the police had to work with early on in the investigation. The evidence in the car, nothing found in the river, the cases Ray was working on, his home life, his brother's apparent suicide, that's all they had, and they kind of hit a wall. The investigation stalled until July 30th, 2005. So 2.5 months or so after Ray went missing. A couple of fishermen in a boat on the Susquehanna found a laptop in the river. This laptop was found very near to the bridge where Ray's car was parked nearby. These fishermen had the presence of mind to pull the laptop out of the river and turn it into the police. They must have been familiar with Ray's case, because why else would you do that? If you were in a boat floating down the river and saw a laptop, yeah, you'd probably pick it up, but would you turn it into the police? Like, I thought that was so wild that somebody randomly found this thing and fucking took it to the police station. Perhaps, but I think I probably would have just checked it out and left it sitting on the side of the river. I don't know. But anyways, police were able to quickly determine that this was Ray's work laptop, the one that was missing from the laptop bag in Ray's home. But here's the crazy part. The hard drive was not in the computer. And it wasn't nearby. Police searched that part of the river and could not find the hard drive anywhere. And this was the same area that they had searched back in April, but now it's July. It's hot. We get very little rain in the month of July here in Pennsylvania, so the river level was really low. The fishermen were able to just see it at the bottom of the river. It was right there in the open. It probably had been there the whole time, but searchers could have never found it with the Susquehanna being the way it was back in April. Analysts did say that throwing a laptop into the river from even from the bridge would not have dislodged the hard drive. This thing had to be manually taken out purposefully. So investigators were really curious as to what could have been on that hard drive that needed to be destroyed. But guess what? The hard drive was found a couple of months later in October by people who also had the presence of mind to take it to the police station. I just was blown away. I guess if you find anything on the banks of the river, you should probably take it to the police station. That if we learn one lesson from this case is whenever you find anything, just take it to the police station because it's probably important. Police were able to determine by serial numbers and all that jazz that this was the hard drive to Ray's laptop they had found earlier in the river. The hard drive was terribly damaged. It was rusted and waterlogged and broken. First, they sent the hard drive to some part of the Secret Service that analyzes shit like that. They were not able to get anything off the hard drive. Then it was sent to Quantico, to the FBI, to be analyzed. The FBI also was not able to get anything off the hard drive. So then, in a last-ditch effort, police sent this hard drive to a company called Crawl On Track. I think that's what it's called. That's what I have written in my notes. I'm gonna trust it. Crawl On Track. Apparently, these people are really fucking good at getting information off broken hard drives. They had been the ones to recover the information from the Challenger space shuttle that exploded in midair. This company got their digital information even after the explosion. But guess what? They still were not able to find any usable data from Ray Grecar's hard drive. Unfucking real. Somebody threw this hard drive in the river and just destroyed all of its data forever. So what looked like a really promising clue took the investigation precisely nowhere. And police were basically back at square one. And honestly, that's basically where the investigation is at today, with still nothing. Ray has never been found, and no more leads have surfaced. But I did promise that we were going to go back and revisit that drug trafficking case that Ray was looking into. So let's talk about that for a minute right now. While I was doing my research for this episode, I came across an article from Penn Live by reporter Wallace McKelvey. This article came out in April of 2020. And in this article, McKelvey discussed how he met with a confidential informant across the country. He didn't say where. He said he had to travel across the country to meet with this guy. This person, who McKelvey obviously never named, said that he had been a cellmate of a man that was involved in a drug trafficking case that took place in Centre County, Pennsylvania, where a prosecutor was murdered. This unknown informant said his cellmate spoke in detail about how this group of individuals were able to murder a district attorney and get away with it. And they never even looked into them for it. Now, I had heard of the drug trafficking case on the Disappeared episode that I watched in my research. The show Disappeared on Investigation Discovery did an episode on Ray Grecar. And the lead investigator at the time, he's now retired, was interviewed on that episode. His name is Daryl Zaccagni, and he basically dismissed the idea that Ray's disappearance had anything to do with this drug trafficking case. He basically said this was a joint investigation between the Centre County District Attorney and the Attorney General's Office of Pennsylvania. However, this was the largest drug bust ever to take place in Centre County. Zaccagni said that Ray wasn't all that involved, but he was the public face because he had a better manner of speaking to the press than the Attorney General did. So Ray was basically the public face of this case, but he really wasn't as involved in the investigation as the Attorney General was. Zaccagni said something along the lines of, by getting rid of the district attorney, what would these criminals really have to gain? Ray Grecar had 7 assistant district attorneys under him. Someone is still going to prosecute this case. So what did they think was going to happen? They'd kill this guy and then they would just go free? But my first thought was, criminals are fucking dumb. They could definitely think that. So after I read that article by Wallace McKelvey for Penn Live, I started digging a little bit into what was this drug trafficking case. I actually reached out to McKelvey on Twitter, sent him a message. He never fucking responded, whatever. I wanted to ask him, okay, what was the case? At least you can say who were the criminals. Sure, don't give up your source. I wanted to verify that the drug trafficking case that I did find was the same one McKelvey was talking about. He didn't respond, so I'm going to tell you what I found. In 2003, an investigation began into narcotics trafficking in Centre County. Police identified a guy named Taji Lee as the ringleader. He's 24 years old. His street name is Verbal. Yeah, Verbal. V-E-R-B-A-L. So guy can speak. That's awesome. Cool. I think Taji is a way cooler street name than fucking Verbal, but whatever. So in January 2005, police had enough evidence against fucking stupid Verbal to arrest him and 4 other of his cronies or what underlings, whatever they were. The 4 yahoos pled guilty and were sentenced to life in prison for their drug crimes, but Verbal decided to go to trial. He pled not guilty. He went to trial saying that he was railroaded, I guess, or framed by the Centre County police, the Bellefonte police. And Ray Grecar would have been part of the team that prosecuted Taji Verbal Lee, but the Attorney General's office was going to take the lead. So that was this drug trafficking case. It was a multi-million dollar operation run by a 24-year-old fucking ding-dong. Surprise, surprise, Taji Verbal Lee was convicted of his crimes and sentenced to like hundreds of years in state prison. He currently resides at Mahanoy State Correctional Institute in Pennsylvania. So police really didn't look into this drug trafficking case as a cause for Ray Grecar's disappearance very much. But I think they give these criminals too much credit. They just assume that these idiots are going to think, well, why would we kill this one guy? We're still going to go to prison. No, I'm pretty sure these people are dumb enough to believe that by killing the prosecutor on their case, that they might actually get away with it. Now, I'm going to go back to that article by Wallace McKelvey for a second. I know I'm jumping around a little bit, and I hope that you can follow me. I feel like this is convoluted. I'm doing my best. So, in the article, This confidential informant tells McKelvey that his cellmate admitted to being part of a conspiracy to murder a Pennsylvania prosecutor, a Centre County prosecutor. He says that this group of drug traffickers used a woman to lure this unnamed prosecutor to the place of his demise. So that brings me back to Ray Grecar being seen at the Street of Shops with a woman. But this woman was described as 30s or 40s, well-dressed, tall, slender, attractive, someone that did not look out of place in a higher-end area with a man like Ray, who was also well put together, a professional looking man. So I do have a hard time believing that this barely organized drug trafficking organization was able to procure a professional looking woman to take on this role. It kind of fits. I hope I'm not profiling here, but I don't think that a bunch of younger trash bags are going to be able to find a nice looking older lady to lure a professional man into a bad situation. It just doesn't equate to me. If I had been able to get a little more information out of Wallace McKelvey, the author of this article, I would be able to speak on this with a little bit more certainty. But like I said, fucking didn't respond. Whatever. Now there's one theory that I thought of that I hadn't heard anyone else speak about. And that was maybe Ray was right about his brother's death not being a suicide. What if Roy was also murdered? And please understand, this is just my own speculation. I did try to look into Roy's death as much as I could, but there's not that much information out there. But if Ray questioned whether or not his brother took his own life, maybe there was something to that. If Roy had been murdered and then Ray disappears in a very similar way, could there be a connection there? I'm really not trying to be irresponsible with my own thoughts and putting them out there. I have no facts or information to back up this question. It's just literally that, a question. Something more for us to think about. Because Ray Grecar has never been found. No connection has ever been made between Taji Lee or Jerry Sandusky or this still unidentified woman to Ray's disappearance. Ray Grecar is still missing. Today, he would be 75 years old. And if you would like more information on this case, I definitely recommend the Disappeared episode on Investigation Discovery. I will put the link to that episode in the show notes. Okay, Keystoners, you gotta let me know what you think happened here. Go to the Facebook group, KSOM Keystoners, and tell me your opinion. Did it have to do with Jerry Sandusky? Did it have to do with Taji Lee? Was it a case of a random suicide? I want to know what you think. I hope everybody's enjoying what's left of our summer here in the Northeast. Have fun, stay safe, and whatever you do, stay keystoned, my friends.